Hi, everyone. thanks for the introduction, and thanks for having me here. My name is Eric Potash, and I'm with the Center for Data Science and Public Policy at the University of Chicago. And for the past year, I've been working with these guys at the Chicago Department of Public Health and my collaborators at the University of Chicago in our fellowship called Data Science for Social Good to build predictive models for lead poisoning in the city of Chicago. And I have no disclosures. So lead, as many of you know, is toxic to humans and causes neurological damage, the consequences of which include reduced IQ and psychiatric disorders. There are hundreds of thousands of infants poisoned each year in the U.S. by lead, and that is estimated to amount to billions of dollars in damages each year. So what's the cause of this poisoning? Well, lead was present in paint, pipes, gasoline, and a variety of other consumer products until it was banned in the late 70s. But a lot of those products, especially the paint and pipes, are still around in older buildings, which Chicago has many. And infants are really the population that's at risk to poisoning from these products due to their small size, their physiology, and the fact that they're prone to crawling on the ground and picking up dust and paint chips and putting them in their mouths. So Chicago, like cities across the country, has been dealing with this problem for a number of years. And the way that they do that is through blood lead level screening. And so infants between the ages of 12 and 36 months are required really, but in practice, the difference between practice is big, and to have blood lead level screenings during that time. And by the time they enter Chicago public schools, they also are required to have a screening on file. So what happens with these screenings? Well, a test over the threshold, so it's measured in micrograms per deciliter, a test over the threshold of 5 micrograms per deciliter is considered poisoning. Over 10 micrograms per deciliter will trigger a home investigation from the Department of Health, and the inspectors will go to the home in search of hazards, interior and exterior, and any that are found are required legally to be remediated, but again, enforcement is scarce. The major shortcoming with the current approach is the fact that it actually depends on infants to be a little poisoned, right, over that threshold of 5 or 10 micrograms per deciliter in order for the inspection and remediation process to begin. Despite the shortcomings, though, the process has been effective because homes are getting remediated. And you can see in this plot that in the last 15 years, the incidence rate of lead poisoning has plummeted. So back in 2000, roughly a third of all infants in the city were being poisoned. That's about 10,000 per year. And more recently, the rate is something like 3% or 2,000 per year. But if we zoom in towards the last couple of years, you'll see that the trend line is flattening, and that's related to the shortcomings of the current approach. And so this is why we're interested in applying predictive analytics moving forward. So that was the trend in time. Here it is in space for the year 2011. And so because of the nature of lead poisoning, the spatial component is extremely important to our analysis because really the hazard is environmental. And so here the regions are census tracts, and the darkest ones have high rates of incidence, over 15%, and the lightest ones might have no incidence of lead poisoning or no infants born that year. If you're familiar with Chicago geography, you'll notice that lead poisoning is highly correlated with all kinds of other issues like poverty and crime. But in doing our predictions and in building our model, while the spatial component is not, it's not so simple, because if we look forward in time, so this is 2011, if we go forward in time, we'll see that it jumps around. So 2011, 2012, 2013, it's not so predictable, at least using traditional modeling. Okay, so our goal is to build a reliable predictive model for lead poisoning. And this is what our pipeline would look like. So we have a child, and we're going to use information about that, who that child is and where that child lives, as inputs into a model, which will generate a risk score, a number between 0 and 1, 1 meaning at high risk for lead poisoning. And that risk score is going to inform an intervention. And so we're interested mainly in two different kinds of interventions. The one that we're really focusing on is a preemptive intervention. And for that, we're looking to target infants who are not yet susceptible to poisoning, so under 12 months, including pregnant women. And in those cases, what we want to do is use our predicted risk for lead poisoning to send the inspectors out and do the remediation before the child is even susceptible to the poisoning, and hopefully remove the hazard and thereby reduce the exposure or eliminate it entirely. There are other kinds of interventions, though, that might involve an infant who's currently at risk. And in those cases, we're just interested in evaluating their risk for lead poisoning and sharing that information with health workers or with parents to inform them about various resources that that might help their children. Okay, so the type of model that we're talking about often goes under the heading called machine learning. And if you haven't heard of this term or buzzword yet, you'll probably hear about it soon. And I just wanted to spend a minute or a slide mentioning what machine learning is. So machine learning, to me, is about building models which are optimized for their predictive performance. And that's in contrast with models that some of you may be familiar with from epidemiology or econometrics or just statistics, which are often built for their explanatory power. For example, if we want to reliably determine the relationship between some input variable and some outcome, that would be an explanatory analysis. On the other hand, in machine learning, we're really interested just in the predictions. And sometimes that allows us to use more complicated models and more complicated input data to get better results for our particular application. Okay, so in this particular application, lead modeling, here is a sort of a flow of the data and the model. So the top row represents all of our data sources. So starting from the top left, we have the data given to us by the Department of Health, including blood tests and home inspections that I mentioned earlier. And then the remainder of the data is all actually public. So we have the American Community Survey, which gives us sociodemographics at the census tract level. And we have building permits and violations. That's public data from the Chicago Data Portal. And all of that data is spatial and temporal in nature, and we aggregate it into a ton of features, which I'll describe shortly. And then lastly, we have the assessor and building footprint data, and that gives us information about a given building's age of construction, number of units, condition, property values, things like that. And all of that goes into a model. Before we can actually build the model, we have to overcome a small hurdle, which is the fact that we don't actually have a list of all the children living in Chicago. For that, we need to take our blood tests, which have first names, last names, and dates of birth, and link them together in order to get kids. And it's a little bit of a messy process, but because the entries are done by hand, and so they're prone to error. But once we do that, we can look at trajectories for individual children. So here are three such trajectories. The top one is a child who's severely poisoned. Remember that 5 micrograms per deciliter is the threshold for poisoning, so this is more than 10 times the threshold. The green curve is more mildly poisoned. It actually is not sufficient to trigger a home investigation in Chicago. And then the blue curve is actually below the CDC level for poisoning, though, of course, no positive level of lead is healthy. So, as I mentioned earlier, it's really the spatial component is crucial in this model. And, of course, because if I were to ask you, what is the likelihood of a child being poisoned for lead, of course, the first thing you would look for is where that child lives and go into the home, just as we do today, and look for hazards. And so the historical record of an individual address will look something like this. This is about 20 years of blood test data at one address. And each curve represents an individual child, and sometimes that's just a point if we only have one sample for that child. And so you'll see that over time, things change, and individual kids have different outcomes. Before 2005, at this particular address, almost every child was poisoned. After 2005, it looks like it's a little bit mixed. Some kids are getting poisoned, others aren't. So in some ways, blood lead level tests are a noisy sensor for lead in the environment. But of course, kids will have different outcomes based on their behavior, based on their parents' behavior, based on renovations or remediations that may have occurred in their particular unit in the address, and so on. So these are a bunch of addresses in Chicago. This is actually my apartment building, and there are about 600,000 addresses, residential addresses in the city. A lot of them are in larger apartment complexes like this one, and there's about 500,000 of those. And zooming out, we have about 40,000 census blocks, and those 40,000 census blocks get grouped into 800 census tracts. And the 800 tracts, those get grouped into 50 different wards. And these are all the different spatial scales that are important in building a model like this. And we combine those five different spatial scales with a bunch of time scales. So everything from as short as 1 year through all the record history that we have, which is about 30 years. And we get a large number of different levels at which we want to aggregate our data. What kinds of things do we actually aggregate? So going into this model, we have lots of obvious features that we get from our blood tests. For example, how many kids were tested at this address in the past year, or 5 years, or 10 years? What is the proportion of children who were poisoned in this census tract in the past year, or 5 years, or 10 years? And so on. And because of all the different spatial scales and all the different data going into the model, there's literally thousands of features that we can generate. In the end, we use about 1,000 of them. Some of them don't really make sense at a particular spatial or temporal scale, so we pare it down. Okay, so once we actually have all of our data ready and we're building models, we need a good way to evaluate them. And the way we do that is using what's commonly called temporal cross-validation, or colloquially I would call it a historical reenactment. So what we would do is we would train the model, we'd pick a date that we're doing our historical reenactment, say January 1st, 2013, and we would train the model on data available until that date. And then we would test the model on outcomes that happen after that date. So for the preemptive investigation that I discussed earlier, we would be interested in testing the model on kids who are currently in the historical reenactment under 12 months old, and then comparing it to the outcomes that we actually have on record for those children. So to do that comparison, we have a variety of different metrics that we would use. One of the most important metrics is built around the fact that our partners at the Department of Health have limited resources to actually do these interventions. So a very useful metric in that particular scenario is what's called precision at K. So to calculate the precision at K, we pick some number K, for example, 1,000, and we run our model on all of the, say, children under 12 months old, and we do the natural thing. We have 1,000 interventions, and we actually just think about what would happen if we applied them to the 1,000 riskiest individuals in our sample. And then we look at the proportion of those that actually would have been poisoned historically, and that gives us a number, and that's the proportion. In other words, it's the proportion of interventions that actually targeted someone who would have been poisoned. And we would compare that number for, among other things, with what's called a random baseline, which is the number of those interventions that would have targeted children who would have been poisoned if we just distributed the interventions randomly. So that's just equal to the rate of incidence of lead poisoning. And so I'll give you an example. Here's a chart showing this information. So on the x-axis, we have the count, or the number of interventions performed. And on the y-axis, we have precision. So it's the proportion of those interventions, again, that targeted someone who would have been poisoned. And so the green curve, that's the baseline, and it's just flat because it's just the population incidence of lead poisoning for this cohort. And in this case, it was 4%, roughly 4%. And then we have our models curve, which changes, right? Because as we go farther and farther down the list, doing interventions on kids that were scored less and less risky, the intervention is less and less likely to target someone who actually would be poisoned. So, for example, at around 600 interventions, our model has a precision of about 18%. And that's pretty good. That's more than four times better than the baseline that we would have gotten just by with an uninformed approach. Okay, and here's another plot with a bunch more models. This is sort of comparing the how the model improves as you increase the spatial accuracy. or the spatial resolution of it. And naturally, as you would guess, as you increase spatial resolution, you increase model performance, and this just gives us a handle on sort of how much the increase, how big that increase is. Okay, and so I just want to end by saying that if you want to get involved, there's plenty that you can do. So if you're involved in LED specifically, you can replicate or deploy this model in your city or practice. And if you're working on other problems in public health where you think predictive analysis would be good, you should reach out to us at the Center for Data Science and Public Policy at the University of Chicago. Thank you.